Welcome to a Wednesday edition of The Damage Report. And of course, it's big news. That's correct. It's Big News Wednesday. And one of the biggest news that you'll hear all day is that Rayvanna joins me on the show for Big News Wednesday, hailing from the middle of the country somewheres. How you doing, Ray? What's going on? Come on. What's going on?
I'm good. It's the fall time officially. I've got my little pumpkin candle behind me again to give me the sense of the season. I had pumpkin hummus this weekend that was delicious. So I'm in a good fall mood. I'm going to go for a run right after this and enjoy the very tame weather we've been having here.
So is it brisk? A brisk run?
It'll be a brisk run, and it'll put a smile on my face, unlike all of the runs I did in July and August.
You know what? Year. That's the one thing I do miss. I used to run, of course, when I was in high school up in Michigan, and the brisk run is amazingly underrated. It's a beautiful situation. It's a good breathing system for your lungs. Glad you guys are here. Glad you're with us too, Ray. Really fast update, since you guys love you some John Iadarola. I've been texting with him this morning. He decided to text me right before I'm supposed to jump on his show. Guess what he was asking? But yes, full disclosure. Yep, I'm putting him on blast. He asked, where do you buy your hats? I didn't ask him why he needs to compile a bunch of hats, but one thing I do want to say is hats and hoodies, hashtag hats and hoodies. I think John is going to make a comeback with a little bit different kind of swag. Just saying, he's wearing suits and ties before he left. I think he's relaxed now, new daddy out there. Give him trouble. Tell him which hats to buy. I told him go on clearance racks because there's no way I'm paying $45 for a hat. Anyways, we've got things to actually talk about. I just want to, you know, let you guys know that John's still around. He's still very active. He's not just buried his head back in the corner of his room hanging out with his baby. He is still had his finger on the pulse. Maybe we can update him on what's been going on politically, especially since we got all this striking workers thing going on. We saw how the Hollywood and writer strikers strike seems to have ended on some good terms. Well, President Biden has found himself on the UAW line out there trying to help out these auto workers. Let's go to that and see what's going on.
I heard me say it many times. Wall Street didn't build the country. The middle class built the country. Yeah. Unions built the middle class. Yeah. That's a fact. So let's keep going. You deserve what you've earned, and you've earned a hell of a lot more than you're getting paid now. Thank you very much.
There's President Biden. He joined a bunch of UAW auto workers on the picket line. Bullhorn out, hat on. I'm just glad he was not there with his sleeves rolled up, because that's the typical politician move once he's out in the streets. Maybe it's too chilly out there. But still, he's out there and helping these guys talk about their demands for better wages and also work conditions as well from these auto companies that, of course, are talking about how they're going into bankruptcy over them. Here's more from his visit. Let's watch more.
I marched along the UAW picket lines when I was a senator since 1973, but I tell you what, first time I've ever done it as a president. Okay. Folks, look, one thing is real simple, and to be very brief. The fact of the matter is that you guys, UAW, you saved the automobile industry back in 2008 and before. Made a lot of sacrifices, gave up a lot, and the companies were in trouble. But now they're doing incredibly well. And guess what? You should be doing incredibly well, too. Stick with it, because you deserve the significant raise you need and other benefits.
In confirmation of what they're looking for, stick to it. Stay on the line. You deserve these benefits and these better wages. The president is pointing out there. It's a big push for them, considering the president stepped out on those on the striking line with them, which I don't think is a regular thing for presidents to do. Definitely gives them some kind of a big push of support. Maybe it'll help with these negotiations. We'll see, but there's not many corporations and companies that respect political figures, considering they bought all of them off anyways. So why would they listen to him? At least maybe for the rest of the public to see the support, and maybe that's what could push them further. Automakers have been arguing, though, that these wages, as I point out, might destroy the entire auto industry in America. And also General Motors said this in a statement specifically. Our focus is not on politics, but continues to be on bargaining in good faith with the UAW leadership to reach an agreement as quickly as possible that rewards our workforce and allows GM to succeed and thrive into the future. Part of their concern, Rayvanna, is that these electric car mandates and things that are going on with the shift from gas to electric is something that's such a big endeavor that they can't possibly pay the people that'll be part of shifting it from gas to electric anyway. I mean, what are they going to do? Make electric cars that people would have to buy and purchase, and then there's a profit based off of that? You know, once you're selling electric cars, you have to sell them well under the cost of making them. Everyone knows that, right? What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, one of the reasons the UAW hasn't endorsed Biden yet for the upcoming presidential election is because of his initiatives on green energy, particularly when it pertains to electric vehicles, because they need these. They're fighting. One of the things they're fighting for is job protections, job security, and training programs so that these workers can, you know, maintain employment while these organizations, while these companies are shifting towards manufacturing electric vehicles, because these workers are going to need to be retrained to do these jobs, and that's going to cost money. So that's one of the things they're fighting for, and also one of the reasons that they have given Joe Biden as to why they haven't endorsed him yet, although all signs point to they will endorse him because he has been significantly better for labor than Donald Trump. I don't think you could accuse Donald Trump of doing one good thing for labor during his time as president. Whereas, you know, there's an entire litany of things that particularly Joe Biden's NLRB has done. I don't think that he's a, you know, tremendous president by any means, but his administration has been very good on union rights, on labor rights generally, aside for squashing some, you know, the rail, potential railroad worker strike. That being said, Trump also went to try to appease the workers, and he chose to go to a non-union workplace. So I think that Joe Biden is definitely going to get the endorsement of labor, regardless of their concerns about electric vehicles. And he's the first president to ever sitting president to join a picket line, and maybe that'll help move, you know, push forward some momentum so that these workers do get those protections that they're seeking for as it pertains to EVs.
And also, we shouldn't forget, because the previous negotiations with the auto workers and these companies, they did take, at least they're not normal 20% increases for their wages and things like that. So they're looking to maybe get those now, because that was a concession to help the auto industry corporations and companies there. So when it comes to back around to evening out, because maybe there's a reciprocal relationship there could be. There's the company and then there's the workers, because both need each other, right? It's just not there. And it's talking about how these sharks are coming after us. They're trying to destroy us. If you take stake in the fact that they're part of this entire business, maybe they're in support of this business continuing where they can live, because everything else is going up. By the way, we're switching over to electric. And as I'm seeing, literally as I drove in this morning, over $6 prices for gas at the lower end. So as we continue to push for, let's stick with gas, or we're going to switch over to electric, how dare we? Are you still happy for these gas prices from these gas companies and other corporations that are gouging you for that? Because it's coming from every direction. You mentioned Donald Trump. Let's go that direction. The Republicans and conservatives have decided to respond to President Biden showing up the UAW picket line. And they're not very happy about it. And they're all led by their Lord and Savior, Donald Jesus Trump. This is what he truthed. He says, of course, it's kind of long. Joe Biden's, I want you guys to pay attention to how much he mentions what he will do versus what he's complaining about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's draconian and indefensible electric vehicle mandate will annihilate the U.S. auto industry and cost countless thousands of auto workers their jobs. Pause. This is similar to what Tim Scott was saying. Anytime something could possibly go wrong with negotiations or even with an industry, we're always afraid of the industry doing something to workers, and therefore we can't do anything to protect workers because the industry might retaliate and become crybabies and then execute whatever kind of punishment they want on us because they rule us. The first thing Donald Trump is talking about. Continuing on, the only thing Biden could say that would help the striking auto workers is to announce the immediate termination of his ridiculous mandate. Again, kowtowing to the companies. Anything that else is just a feeble and insulting attempt to distract American labor from this vicious Biden betrayal of companies. Crooked Joe should be ashamed to show his face before these hardworking Americans he is stabbing in the back. With Biden, it doesn't matter what hourly wages they get. In 3 years, it'll be no auto worker jobs as they will all come out of China and other countries. Here's finally when he talks about him and see if you get any details. With me, there will be jobs and wages like you've never seen before. Our economy will grow. I think the kid in third grade that was running for student council had a similar type of speech about what he'll do. He said, you know, with me, there's going to be pizza parties every Wednesday and Friday. Lunches and recess will be extended. Math class will be non-existent. How, bro? How are you going to pull that off? You just say things, but we still buy it, even though he's 85 years old. And you mentioned this too, Rayvana. He went to speak to his own group of auto workers because, you know, he's for the regular guy too. There's one problem with that. As you point out, Trump was speaking today. I believe he's coming today to speak with UAW members at a non-union plant in Macomb County up in Michigan because he supports the workers. You know how that is. A little bit more. The UAW president, Sean Fain, criticized the move by Trump while calling out all these other things that he's been up to. Someone needs to say it, so we'll let him say it.
I find a pathetic irony that the former president is going to hold a rally for union members at a non-union business. And, you know, all you have to do is look at his track record. His track record speaks for itself. In 2008, during the Great Recession, he blamed UAW members. He blamed our contracts for everything that was wrong with these companies. That's a complete lie. In 2015, when he was running for president, he talked about doing a rotation, taking all these good paying jobs in the Midwest and moving them somewhere in the South where people work for less money, and then to make people beg for their jobs back at lower wages. And the ultimate show of his how much he cares about our workers was in 2019 when he was the president of the United States. Where was he then? GM was, our workers at GM were on strike for 60 days, for 2 months. They were out there on the picket lines. I didn't see him hold a rally. I didn't see him stand up at the picket line. And I sure as hell didn't hear him comment about it.
A little bit of audio issues on my end, but there's the UAW president talking about all the things Donald Trump has gone into. And of course, the disastrous history he's got when it comes to actually supporting workers. So why would they listen to this guy? It doesn't matter because there's other folks too that do listen to him. Here's a couple of conservatives openly talking about how much they hate regular Americans. Again, they want you to vote for them and they want to tell you how much they hate you and will do nothing to support you at the same time. One, Elon Musk is big on this. A person on X said, Biden says he agrees the UAW should get a 40% increase just in case the U.S. needed some more inflation, because again, it has nothing to do with these companies and corporations, which Elon Musk responded to. He said they want a 40% pay raise and a 32-hour work week. Sure way to drive GM, Ford, and Chrysler bankrupt in the fast lane. Well, I mean, you should be okay with that, bro, who owns an electric car company that's in competition with those. It's almost like you just don't care about folks to the degree of also supporting your competition. Don't you want to run them out of business? Maybe this is capitalism, right? A little bit more, one more piece here of all the support for how much they love the rich and the ones who pay them off. Sean Hannity has to do his part from the pundit point of view. He's also supporting CEO pay because, you know, they just don't make enough. As a matter of fact, what do you want them to do? Not have 12 houses? Watch this guy.
It doesn't mean a thing to me about this UAW issue. I will say this now. The latest offer was a 21% pay increase rejected by the union. They wanted a 4-day work week, 32-hour work week. Sorry, guys, I can't support that. I love you guys. I love working people. I don't care if you do 40 hours in 4 days. I'm cool with that. You got to get your 40 hours in. Got to get the production time on the line. They got to make a profit. You know, the union is mad that the CEO's got a 40% raise. Okay, they ended up making a lot of money and profit, although, you know, the canary in the coal mine and the entire business is Ford lost $4.5 million. That's a lot of money to lose. $4.5 million. $4.5 billion in their electric vehicle line. That's unsustainable. They cannot sustain.
They lost so much money, they can't sustain it. Again, we're talking in terms of these corporations, these CEOs, and the mass amounts of money that they have, and also the way that they move things around to continue to have this amount of money. Let's not ignore all the ways that they've found to use the money that they've got to not pay the folks and also the company to continue to operate, but to go back into their pockets as much as possible. And where does it come from? It comes from the regular folks. Who cares about you? What kind of power do you have? Which politicians have you bought off, Rayvana?
I will say, for the first time in my life, I can say the words, I agree with Sean Hannity. He is an idiot. He was right there. That was the one thing he's ever said that was true. And I fully agree with it. I think that, as I mentioned earlier, you know, obviously there's a strong indication that the UAW is going to endorse Biden in the upcoming election. And there's a really interesting politics side to this as well when it comes to Trump visiting a non-union plant and the, you know, very, very strong words that the UAW president had to say about Donald Trump. But Elon Musk coming to the defense of these corporations against the workers is so funny, because this is a man who has just been surrounded in workplace violations. This is a man who's you know, Tesla plants routinely practice severe race discrimination. This is someone who, you know, whose companies have complaint after complaint after complaint with labor boards and in individual states and nationally. So for him to be, first of all, replying to some random account with a Fight Club avatar, who, you know, clearly must be an expert on the economy and inflation. But I mean, it does say something that the only line that people like Elon Musk and Sean Hannity compare it is, oh, if we give these workers these wage increases, then that will be bad for the economy. But they will never, ever say increasing the bonuses, increasing the profits of the CEOs is bad for the economy. Because in their minds, the economy is only working when the workers themselves are struggling.
100%. That's how they push things forward. It's the same thing over and over and over again. What do you guys expect something from us? Look, this is, again, I've said it so many times, and I wish this was a normal narrative. If enough Americans say it, we are America. We are the ones who vote for folks, but they don't pay any attention to us. We're talking about we're the best nation in the history of the world. You must be lucky to be an American. What is lucky about being an American when it comes to things like how the economy is working against regular Americans? What is it that's the benefit from us and someone else? If just the top people make all this money, that's how we base our success on, is the richest people getting richer. What is it about being an American that's so wonderful if they literally openly tell you, yo, you're an American. You haven't done anything yet to even be able to live. Why is that such the bottom barrel thing in this, the greatest nation in the world? What's so great about it? You're promoting it, but you're not doing anything for the folks that happen to be Americans. People are rushing to the border to come and be Americans. What for? To be told that they don't deserve healthcare, that they don't deserve a job, a living wage, they deserve to be able to feed their family? What's so great about that? They're promoting that idea. We have to reject it sooner or later, and I'm not sure why we don't yet, because we're in some kind of a kidnapping situation is the problem. Let's take a first break. We'll take it a few minutes early. When we come back, though, we do have some insanity on the Democratic side. Bob Menendez finds himself still in the same hot water, and it's getting hotter because there's more Democrats that are coming out against him, wanting him to step down. Resignation is more on the table, but maybe expulsion might be up. We'll talk about that and a lot more, but your thoughts first in a second. I told you guys, I told you we'd be back. It's a little bit after the hour. We might as well jump into this next story with Bob Menendez.
Well, tonight, the list of Democrats calling on Senator Bob Menendez to resign is growing. Fellow New Jersey Senator Cory Booker now among the more than 20 Democratic senators saying Menendez needs to step aside. Menendez is back on Capitol Hill today, but is set to appear in court tomorrow on 3 counts of federal bribery charges.
What do you know? After John Fetterman decided to be the one voice to finally speak out and say Bob Menendez needs to go, we now have 26 Democratic senators that are openly calling for Senator Menendez to then resign over these bribery allegations. Yes, they're still in the allegation phase. Some evidence has come forward, which has galvanized this approach to it, but it's building. Fellow New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, as they pointed out, is one of these folks who's joined on. Yo, if you're from the same state, I guess you're supposed to normally agree with everything the other guy does. Never understood that logic, but that's the way it is. Here's a bit of his statement. Apparently, these last 3 paragraphs are really where the meat is. So let's go down to that bottom part. This is from Cory Booker. He said the details of the allegations against Menendez are of such a nature and that the faith and trust of New Jerseyans, as well as those he must work with in order to be effective, have been shaken to the core. As Senator Menendez prepares to mount his legal defense, he has stated that he will not resign. Senator Menendez fiercely asserts his innocence and it's therefore understandable that he believes stepping down is patently unfair. But I believe this is a mistake. Stepping down is not an admission of guilt, but an acknowledgement that holding public office often demands tremendous sacrifices at great personal cost. Senator Menendez has made these sacrifices in the past to serve, and in this case, he must do so again. I believe stepping down is best for those Senator Menendez has spent his life serving. So Booker's calling for him to step down. The call is seen as significant since they do have this close personal relationship, of course, both from Jersey as well. But Fetterman, again, was that first one. And he went on MSNBC with Joy Reid, and he had a few more details in colorful language, just things that Menendez has been up to. Let's watch.
Are you surprised it took so long for so many of your colleagues to follow?
Honestly, I was actually surprised that I was the first one. I mean, it's so black and white. I mean, it's so clear. The last times there's ever been a man with so much cash in their home in New Jersey was Tony Soprano. You know, it's not a close call. And if you were looking for the most incriminating kinds of evidence, nobody could even come up with gold bars in a mattress. And again, he's entitled to have his day in court, but he is not entitled to remain in the Senate, and he needs to go.
As we point out, 25 of the 51 Democrats are calling for his resignation, which means there's 25 left. Here's a few that are kind of on the fence or supporting it. Menendez received some tepid support from Senators Joe Manchin, West Virginia, is completely unsurprising, Tim Kaine of Virginia, and Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada, who all pointed to either the unfolding legal process or suggested that New Jersey voters should have the last word. Typical political politician talk when it comes to these things, Ravana. I guess, is it fair play? I mean, he hasn't been convicted. Should he step down?
Well, first I want to say John Fetterman thoroughly got his ass there. The Tony Soprano comparison was apt. He absolutely should step down, particularly because the Democrats have a very close lead, a tight lead in the Senate. And there's some tough re-elections coming up, including Menendez himself.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a very easy re-election, but given these indictments, I mean, and this is not his first time around when it comes to allegations of corruption and indictments of corruption. He just beat the rap last time. He's not going to this time. The evidence is, like John Fetterman said, it's black and white. This man needs to step down. But I mean, looking at the people who are supporting him, you've got Joe Manchin and Tim Kaine in the membrane. Like, that is not exactly the group of people you want surrounding you to offer their support. Now, Cory Booker, it took him quite some time to make this statement, given when the indictments came out against Menendez. Mm-hmm. Of course, there, like you mentioned, there is this assumption that he's going to support the senior senator from the state. I think it's kind of brave of Cory Booker to come out and ask him to resign. I think that the calls for him to resign are such now, because it's not just those members, 26 people in the Senate. There's a ton of members of the House who are demanding that he resign in no uncertain terms. And the party, the Democratic Party in New Jersey, is demanding that he resign. And that is in the best interest of the people of New Jersey. That is in the best interest of the Democratic Party. It's in the best interest of the American people. And the choice here is clear. Step down.
Well, we'll see, because there's a thing. He's got a couple of allies that maybe we weren't expecting. Hey, you point out some of these folks like the Joe Manchins of the world. What he really needs is Tom F. Cotton. This is what he X'd. Whatever. It says the charges against Senator Menendez are serious and troubling. Okay, that sounds normal for a Republican. At the same time, though, the Department of Justice has a troubling record of failure and corruption in cases against public figures, from Ted Stevens to Bob McDonald to Donald Trump to Bob Menendez the last time around. I think I'm seeing a pattern here. Senator Menendez has a right to test the government's evidence in court, just like any other citizen. He should be judged by jurors and New Jersey's voters, not by Democratic politicians who now view him as inconvenient to their hold on power. And every time they reveal and show their hands. So the only reason you're talking about this, Tom Cotton, is because you're trying to make it political as far as like, look what they're trying to do to hold on to power. Maybe, because if they were all 100% in support of him, you'd be saying, look at their support of corruption and this corrupt senator is doing this and that. I think they're all doing it. Well, you're in support of him. Are you doing this stuff too? It's an easy way to twist anybody's words to make it seem like it when you're playing politics. Do you want corruption out? Or is it you're still also thinking about, as you mentioned in the first part of that tweet, Donald Trump? Now they can't go after any kind of criminal activity or potential criminal activity from other politicians, because the next very natural question to anyone who's saying Senator Menendez must go and you're Republican is, so what about Donald Trump? Because they can't answer that question. Because if there's corruption, there's corruption. And let's keep it real, potentially on a higher scale from Donald Trump. I got some details from what John Roberts said that I really wanted to talk about. But really fast, in case you guys missed the very beginning of it, this is the shortened version of some of these allegations. Because you heard about gold bars and $480,000. Let's go to that. Menendez and his wife, Nadine Arslanian Menendez, are accused of accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes in exchange for the senator's influence. Prosecutors allege the bribes included gold, cash, home mortgage payments for all you guys having problems paying your mortgage, compensation for a low or no-show job, and a luxury vehicle. I want you guys to look at all that stuff that he's allegedly been bribed over, and money exchanging hands and goods and services and mortgage payments. And think about how many politicians, pundits that have all this kind of money and access and things flowing around, and how much they say to you, as they just said about these auto workers and anyone else that's striking or someone that's making $8 an hour and says, yo, I'd like to feed my family. When they say, stop being lazy, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get to work. The problem with Americans these days is they don't want to work, these millennials. Last I checked, Bob Menendez allegedly is not a millennial. And he also has all of these things that he apparently was nefariously exchanging for his influence. Is he being lazy? Does he not know how to work? Again, all alleged, all charges. We'll see how it gets adjudicated and whether or not he should step down, though. But there's this last picture of them walking into court, he and his wife strolling into court. The part about John Roberts on Fox News, it's the comparison between Donald Trump and his guest. Apparently, showed his hypocrisy is the fun part about that. You got last thoughts on here, Rayvon, before we get out?
Yeah, it reminds me of the Tom Cotton tweet of something that Cenk said the other day that a lot of people were angry about, but I actually fully agreed with Cenk on this point, was that the only way for Menendez to beat this rap this time around is to become a Republican, because then they have no choice but to defend him. I mean, this man was caught red-handed swimming in Scrooge McDuck style pools of Egyptian gold bars, and he thinks he doesn't have to resign. He thinks he's going to get away with it. It's hysterical, but in the Republican Party, you might get away with it. They would absolutely rush to support you. I mean, Donald Trump has been caught with his hand in the cookie jar how many times? And it doesn't matter, because every single time you're going to have this entire party apparatus that backs you, and they're going to back you all across corporate media. They're going to back you all across social media. They're going to back you all across right-wing, you know, fringe media. And that doesn't necessarily exist within the Democratic Party. I mean, we've seen, Democratic members of the House and members of the Senate be asked to step down for a lot less than this. And so the pressure on him, in my opinion, is going to become so much so that he has to step down. But one thing I think is interesting about this story is that we have legalized bribery in this country for politicians. It is totally legal for corporations to bribe our politicians. But the reason, but Bob Menendez needed to go further than that. He wasn't satisfied enough taking those corporate dollars. He needed to be taking money from foreign governments as well, which I think is a fascinating insight into his psyche.
Craziness. I mean, that could be something easily Republicans could jump on and be like, look at this foreign influence. Look at the Democratic Party. But they're being a little bit worried about how they'll do it, because I think they wonder how many other folks that they're actually in favor of could be doing similar things, or former presidents. Just saying. By the way, I think it was Kevin McCarthy. This is one of those points of hypocrisy. It was asked about Menendez, and I think rightfully so, he was railing on him. And then when they asked, well, what about George Santos and his fraud and corruption? He was. Nothing to say. We talked about that long enough. Let's go on to this next story. Maybe good news, but still, the fact we have to fight these battles disturbs me. Let's go straight down to Alabama. Let's go. So as Alabama is looking forward to the next election, they're, of course, gerrymandering districts like most states and like to do to make sure that they find the win that they're looking for. It's worked all across the years, but now they're begging the Supreme Court to allow them to continue to skirt what the Supreme Court told them to do months ago. So Alabama Republicans are looking for them to let them dilute the power of black voters by, again, eliminating a second black district of majority black voters. And they said, you already got one. Wait to see what the majority is in that one district. Again, that flies in the face of what the Supreme Court told them to do. So let's go straight into this. In a brief order on Tuesday, the High Court denied the state's request, handing a significant victory for voting rights advocates and a group of black Alabama voters who sued over their design for gerrymandering. There were no noted dissents from the Supreme Court. The ruling could also provide a boost to Democrats in their quest to retake the House next year. Rather than using the Republican drawn lines for 2024, the order paves the way for an independent expert appointed by a panel of federal judges to design the boundaries instead. That court-appointed expert is set to submit the final map in the coming days. Hold on. It has to be a news story for us to see that an independent expert that maybe could do something with gerrymandering or drawing district lines would do it without any political leanings. And that's from Democratic or Republican sides, by the way. Because yes, gerrymandering happens no matter what, because they're politicians and all they're trying to do is find a new way to get in without actually appealing to their voters any kind of way that they can. Except when it's on steroids and you have to go up to the Supreme Court and you're still fighting to eliminate, directly eliminate black voters, I think it's kind of gone a little bit crazy. So anyways, after the Supreme Court originally ordered Alabama to create that second district in which black voters either comprise of a voting age majority or something close to it, they said, just be close. They're like, sure, well, we did that. So their second map, let's look at it now, which the Supreme Court just rejected, kept one district meeting that majority by 50.65%. And increased that second district from a 30 to 40% black. Again, last I checked, 40% is not the majority, but they said, yo, it's the closest we get. I mean, what do you want us to do? We hate black voters. What are you talking about? So that that darker purple spot is that 50.65% in that one district and the other's only up to 40 because that's how we do democracy, I guess, in Alabama. So still, this is part of the reasons why when Voting Rights Act was getting pushed back and dismantled from back in 2013 and continued on to this day, the reasons why they've targeted certain states that have to get approval from the federal government as far as their gerrymandering or their voting rules that always disenfranchise very particular voters is because there's a history behind that. You have a track record and you want us to just ignore that. That's what they're looking for. And luckily, this one time, it's been put on hold, right?
I think one of the ironic things about this is one of the reasonings the Supreme Court gave their justifications for dismantling the Voting Rights Act was that it had served its purpose, that we weren't seeing instances of, you know, intense voter disenfranchisement like this. So clearly it had served its purpose and we don't need it anymore. So I hope that the justices who were there and helped write that opinion think about that every time one of these, you know, maps comes before them and they have to make a ruling on it. Also say that one of the issues that we, I think, need to address with this is a lot of these heavily gerrymandered maps that disenfranchised black voters were the maps used in the midterm elections. So we saw this massive disenfranchisement. We didn't see this massive red wave that Republicans were talking about, which I think is a good thing, but we did have these maps, a lot of them were in effect. They did disenfranchise people in the midterm election, and we saw the effects of that. But yeah, the other thing I want to say is I think a lot of us have a tendency to look at a congressional map and we'll see it shaped weirdly and think, oh, this must be some horrible gerrymandering. But a lot of times, as one example I always use is the way that districts are chopped up here in Chicago is it's strange because it'll essentially look like a C shape, like a very thin line on one side and then like another big group on the top. And it's to marry the two heavily Hispanic areas of Chicago. And that's what a lot of these districts that they have to, that they create to, you know, make sure that black voters are enfranchised and we have more, you know, black politicians elected into federal office. They have to look like that. So just because a map looks a little bit finicky, like the one we're going to talk about out of Florida, doesn't necessarily mean that it's being gerrymandered for bad purposes. Sometimes that's to, you know, help protect the voting power of black and brown voters.
And maybe something that Alabama would have to do to keep up with the direction from the Supreme Court to then have those majority black districts. Sometimes you have to work around to do that. That's based off of legal ways and actually giving people the vote, not to eliminate it, because we've seen that, as you talked about in Florida. So let's go to that. We know that Alabama just lost their begging to the Supreme Court to allow them to disenfranchise black voters. Florida is bragging about how they actually pulled it off. Let's go to that, because they're still battling this as well, too, from Politico. The ongoing federal trial is separate from a different legal challenge in the state court, although both primarily focus on there was a politician that has lost, Lawson, his dismantled seat that they're trying to fill. In the state case, a Florida circuit judge ruled early this month that the redrawn district violates the state's constitution and ordered the GOP-led legislature to create a new map. That ruling has been appealed. It'll be taken up by a state appeals court later this fall. This is early in the year, and I think they're now taking it up as we go into a fall. So either the state or federal case could result in the map needing to be changed, though. So they've got all kinds of influences going on, but they're still looking to go to what they did before Ron DeSantis did to get Florida where he needed it to be. These are some of the victories that I think he always talks about. The seat that they're looking to fill was held by Representative Al Lawson until he was defeated in 2022. And this is the old map that was used up until 2020. And the district in question, as they're trying to redraw, is that blue one that goes horizontally across the top of Florida. Now, this is what the new map was. And it's also in litigation, where that blue section, which apparently would focus on, or at least franchise many voters that they're trying to get rid of, look where it goes. I think that was not by accident. It's weird how that works. DeSantis was saying this about their redistricting process, in case you didn't go from the visual of it. This is him telling us. His Republican legislator last year debated a map that would have kept a black performing district in North Florida. DeSantis used social media to say that it would be DOA if it was passed. He said this about black voters. After vetoing the map, DeSantis directed aide Alex Kelly to draw a new one and submit it to the legislature, which approved it in a special session with no changes. That sounds democratic. DeSantis also said that Florida was instrumental in them, the House Republicans, even having the majority. We delivered a red tsunami in Florida that gave them an extra 4 seats. That's the story of the midterm. That's what Ron DeSantis said. So all that talk about the red wave and he mentioned a red tsunami. When they talk about it to voters and on TV and Fox News, what they'll say is so many voters are voting with the Republican Party because we connect to the regular man. But they don't point out that he said the reason we did that is because we changed the redistricting maps to eliminate certain voters that we don't care to appeal to, and we actually don't give a damn how they live their lives. Just keep paying us taxes while we disenfranchise your vote, because that's America. One last part. Republicans won 20 of Florida's 28 congressional districts in last fall's elections. That's a 4-seat pickup for the Republicans, which helped the party regain control of the U.S. House, which, by the way, Ray, look what they're doing with that control in the U.S. House.
Right. Shutting down the government, apparently. I will say DeSantis's camp is essentially arguing that he wasn't trying to disenfranchise these black voters in North Florida who have, you know, had their their political voices heard through this district for 30 years. He wasn't trying to silence black voters. He was just trying to redraw congressional lines around geographical boundaries. But incidentally, geographical boundaries don't vote. Black people vote, people vote. Some regional, geographical feature doesn't have the capability to go to the voting booth. There's a reason that and they are framing the argument as this doesn't make any sense. Look at this weird strip. It doesn't resemble any of our other districts. And that's the argument, essentially, the losing argument, by the way, that they were making in the state court. It's the losing argument they're making in front of the 3-judge panel in federal court. And, hopefully it will be ruled. I'm assuming it will be. They'll follow suit and say that this is unconstitutional, as the state court did. But I mean, there is something so deeply evil to that argument, because I think a lot of people are easily tricked by it, because, like I mentioned earlier, they'll say a weird shaped district and they won't quite understand why it might be shaped like that. But again, geographical features, land doesn't vote. People vote.
Yeah. It's outrageous. And by the way, I want to give that one little part about that, because we mentioned the Voting Rights Act. And I remember this from a Guardian article that pointed out this really thing. It's not in the graphic, but immediately after that decision to then allow them to not historically racist and states that disenfranchise particular voters, once that was lifted from them having to actually adhere to allowing people to vote or giving them that right, immediately after the decision with pulling back the Voting Rights Act, Republican lawmakers in Texas and North Carolina, two states previously covered by the law, moved to enact new voter ID laws and other restrictions. A federal court would later strike down the North Carolina law, writing that it was designed to target African Americans, quote, with almost surgical precision. Still doing it. And they don't care that you see it. They're like, well, we're racist. What do you want from us? We've racists voted us in. We're going to start keeping our power. That's how they operate. Let's operate to some of y'all's thoughts. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, though, we've got more going down. Were you one of the kids like me that had that sometimes went for free school lunch? I didn't have any debt. And apparently John Fetterman's on the case again to make sure that other folks don't either. It's a good move. So we got some more good news when we get back. Just like your brisk runs. Maybe I'll do one once it gets brisk around here. It's right. A while for that. Maybe late November. Let's jump to the next story. As I was talking about school lunch debt. Senator John Fetterman is catching heat outside of just his sweatpants swag lately, because now he's actually looking to do something for kids in school. Maybe opportunities are abound. And that would be in eliminating school lunch debt. He's looking to cancel it all. So, of course, Republican heads are spinning over this because, as we know, they hate children eating. Let's go straight into this and some of the things that that Fetterman has been saying as he pushed this legislation. He says school lunch debt is a term so absurd that it shouldn't even exist. That's what he said in a press release. That's why I'm proud to introduce this bill to cancel the nation's student meal debt and to stop humiliating kids and penalizing hunger. So to give some more credit as well, Fetterman also took this on with Senators Sheldon Whitehouse and Peter Welch. So they're on board as well. I mean, sounds like we're giving Fetterman the hero status all day today, but he was part of the leading parts of this. Let's continue with what he was saying. He says it's time to come together and stop playing political games with Americans' access to food. September is Hunger Action Month, and I'm proud to be introducing this bill to help working families now while we work to move our other priorities to combat food insecurity in our nation, is what he then went on to say. So how do people end up with school lunch debt? It's pretty straightforward. Even schools that don't offer these free meals usually won't turn away hungry students. Instead, they'll feed them and collect their payment later. And that leads to the school lunch debt. You got a tab now, bro. And of course, this bill is meant to ease the financial burden on working families by directing the USDA to pay for all debts owed to schools for lunch or breakfast programs. So in case people are thinking that should these school districts just take on this kind of debt themselves, because look, it's going to destroy them just like the auto industries, the USDA is the one to be paying for it. And this is an offshoot of what happened during 2020 in the pandemic, when they did offer school lunch and many of these things, and it was federally supported, and many states started taking it on as well too later. But there's still some Republicans that hate the entire idea. And I really want you guys to see, it's a bit of a video from A More Perfect Union, and how these Republicans and these state legislators talk about the issue of child hunger in school, and see if you think they give a damn about their constituents. Watch.
Hunger is a relative term, Mr. President. You know, I had a cereal bar for breakfast. I guess I'm hungry now.
Yes, I can understand kids going hungry, but is that really the problem of the school district? Is that the problem of the state of North Dakota?
I'm still a no vote on this, because this is, a personal responsibility issue and not a starvation issue.
Is hunger really a problem of the state? Do we really give a damn? Yo, the money that comes in from the state just gets... it litters from the sky. It falls from trees. So we collected all that. All you peons who actually want something for what you paid us can shut the F up. That's what they're saying directly to your faces. And they say, vote for me in the fall. Now, this is what they don't know, Ray. There are over 30 million children in the U.S. who can't afford their school meals, which contributes to the national public school meal debt totaling a staggering $262 million in a year. In Pennsylvania alone, there are nearly 500,000 food insecure children who collectively owe nearly $80 million in debt. And meanwhile, child poverty in the United States more than doubled last year, with the average household income declined. How all that happens is based off of policies or lack thereof or any regulations or anything to help people. Again, we talk about being able to feed their families, and this is literally on the table. And when they see it, they go, I don't care. That's what this is designed to do, to screw you over.
Thoughts? What really struck me was the woman at the end of that More Perfect Union video who said it's a personal responsibility issue for children, for kids, for elementary schoolers, for middle schoolers, for high schoolers. That's an absurd. You're enforcing, you know, personal responsibility on the parents and then watching the kids suffer on their behalf. It's an absurd. No, I don't really buy into the personal responsibility argument, but even for people who do, that is an absurd notion that we should let children starve because of their parents' personal, you know, financial failings, which I don't think is their personal financial failings, but they would make that argument. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, when you have student like lunch debt, they're supposed to give you a meal, but oftentimes they'll take away the hot food that you've gotten in the lunch line and then give you like an apple and a juice. It is not an actual meal. So kids will just not eat. They just won't get the free lunch, as it were, and let the debt rack up. They just won't eat. They'll just go hungry that day, and then they won't be able to do as well in school because they're hungry. And if students have student lunch debt, they're not able to walk at graduation. Some schools won't even give them their diplomas. You know, they're not able to participate in like field trips and activities like that. And they were not allowed to participate in sports. So they're literally ruining these kids' lives because they're hungry and they want to eat lunch. Comically evil example. I had lunch debt and it sucked, but my best friend, it was her birthday and we were going through we were going through the lunch line and the screen was flashing happy birthday. But she had lunch debt. So the lunch lady took the lunch out of her hands while the screen was flashing. Happy birthday. I mean, it is an evil system. And the reason these Republicans look so, again, comically evil while they're supporting this position is because that's exactly what it is. It is an evil position that you think kids should go hungry.
It's predatory. So you can't get a happy, in that scenario, you can't get a happy birthday message because your birthday doesn't exist anymore. You should be punished. You should not have any celebration. All this is because of school lunch debt. Because what? What's the mindset? Do you think, again, third grader goes into school and says, you know what? This $100, although it's burning a hole in my pocket, not going to spend it. Nah, mom gave me $100 every day for this food. I can't believe that they want me to actually spend it on this. I'm going to go out and buy some drugs. What is it you think kids who don't have the means to get food are actually doing? And do you think they're rubbing their hands over me? Well, I can't wait to go steal some of this disgusting food from my lunchroom, because the majority of people actually don't like school lunch. It's like a normal thing that you'll see get talked about. It's supposed to be a common thought process. And maybe some schools have better lunches, but this is the stuff they're racking up debts for. Ray, I did not know that there was kids that weren't allowed to graduate and all mm-hmm. this. Based off of this. And it's criminalizing their hunger, as Fetterman was talking about, and starts from the very beginning. So from this point on, anything that they don't have or they're short on, it becomes almost a criminal thing. They're racking up debt before the age of 10 over food that we throw out every day. Because again, as I said earlier, America, land of the free, opportunity. These are the opportunities that we start with. When there's an unequal playing ground when it comes to education, we know that the next parts of your life, that then you get a job, maybe own a home, all those are derailed when you don't get the right approach in school. And when you're hungry, you can't concentrate. The body works a certain way. It's better to just ignore science and reality and talk about how horrible these children are instead. Two more things that Fetterman's also do as far as food insecurity that's outside of schools that I think is also worth noting. Let's go to graphic 7 here, you guys, as we have a minute left. In June, he was one of four Democrats to vote against the debt limit bill because it included restrictions to SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps. So they're trying to cut that down as well, too, because, you know, someone getting $250 a month for food, that's a devastating effect on our economy. Not the people stuffing $480,000 in their wallet, in their pockets in the middle of closets. That's not a problem at all. Lastly, he introduced legislation to provide free lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner to every student. And in July, he introduced a bill that would make striking workers eligible for SNAP benefits. And under current federal law, workers on strike have to have qualified for SNAP before going on strike. So again, protections for striking workers, because we can't give them any opportunities and benefits either because they just might push and make these corporations pay them or maybe up their standards. All these things. Think about every time they say to you, vote for me, ask them, what did you do for me? What votes did you have for me? Ask yourself the question and you probably won't vote for them anymore. Let's take this break, you guys. We're going into the top of the, into the next back end of the hour. In the aftermath, if you're not members, of course, go to TYT.com. Go ahead and sign up. And we're going to break into more stories there. Me and Ray there. So as we go out, grab the ass cheeks. Hold on. We'll be back in a second.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.